Thanks for joining us on the Port City Church podcast. More information about Port City Church is available at portcitychurch.org.
Well, good morning. My name's Courtney Everett, and I'm on staff here with Tsunami, which is our middle school ministry. And I have invited some of my friends, some of my dear friends, to just sit here with me this morning. This is Gina and Ashley and Javenay. And over the course of the last 10 years, I've really seen how we've had amazing influence in each other's lives. I mean, most of the time for the good, sometimes for the not so good. But over the course of this time that we've known each other, I've seen impact in our lives. And so we want to just sit down and have an honest conversation and just talk about what that's looked like for our lives and in each other. So first of all, let's just talk about how we met.
Well, I met Courtney at the mall. We had our very small babies with us, and I was going to the bathroom to change, and she was coming away from the bathroom, and she reached out to me and just asked me if I wanted to come to a mom's group with her, and I was like, absolutely. It was a time that I needed that community.
So. For sure. We were in the throes of Crazy Town.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
Courtney oddly gave me her phone number, too, at a playground. I think we were both pregnant with our second children and had a good time. Our bigs were playing together, and I was new to Wilmington, and I was really taken back because her first question to me wasn't, so what church are you going to? I don't know if anybody's been to Millington new here. That's like the first question everywhere we went. What church are you going to? What church are you going to? But instead, she gave me her phone number, and we made plans to hang out.
Awesome. And Gina also was in a women's group with us, a small group, and a bunch of other ladies who are dear friends now. And we didn't start as dear friends when our small group started, but I want to just talk about what it felt like to be in our group together.
Oh, I was so intimidated. I was okay with God, but I wanted nothing to do with Jesus. And I was, I was a young mom, and I was invited to go to these, hang out with all these women, and they promised that there was going to be childcare. So I was totally on board. I was like, I can go, I can listen to them talk about the J guy, and I can, replace the word with God in my head if they keep my kids for 2.5 hours. So I was quite intimidating.
I love it. I was also intimidated, probably for a different reason, but my husband and I were also new to Wilmington, and I didn't know very many people, but we were still actively mourning the death of our baby, and he passed away when he was 6 months old from spinal muscular atrophy. And so for a period of time after his death, I really intentionally isolated myself from the world because I thought, just how can anyone possibly understand? And also, I didn't like to be a downer because I thought about it constantly, but I didn't want to bring it up to others as much as I was thinking about it. But yeah. For me, joining the group was really a first step in letting people into my life again.
Yeah, and I saw just that journey for all of you, which was, just really beautiful. But what did it, you said it felt intimidating, Ashley, but what did you see over the course of the time that really kind of made an impact? I saw your faith journey transform, and we got to be a part of that. And really, Javenay and Gina, I saw just this rawness in you guys, and I felt like through the course of relationships and just doing life together, I saw some healing happen. So can y'all just share about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I was tired of pretending. And I remember one particular day in our small group that I just had to say, I'm not okay. I'm not okay with God. I'm not okay inside my heart. And I was just really vulnerable and honest about my sadness and my anger and the truth that I was carrying so much guilt and shame that my baby had died. And honestly, I felt like that I was even the cause of his death because of some sin that I had in my life. But you ladies really helped to carry that burden because I was so scared. But through your tears and your hugs, I really felt the Lord caring for me mm-hmm. and telling me that he loved me and that those things that I was believing that they were lies and they were holding me back from really mm-hmm. being in a relationship with him.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because I remember that day specifically, just because when you told your story, it resonated with me. I have a daughter who has spina bifida, and I was dealing with those very same feelings of shame and guilt. And as I heard you tell your story, I wanted to make sure that you knew that those things were lies, but I could not recognize that for myself. And so in hearing your story, I just wanted, like, my heart leapt because I wanted to be able to show you the truth. Like, that was not the truth that you were believing.
And I think you literally leapt off the couch over to me that day, and I remember feeling mm-hmm. so grateful for your hug and mm-hmm. your hand.
Mm-hmm. It was a beautiful moment.
Yeah, it was where our healing really began, I think.
Mm-hmm. And Ash, what about you?
I got to explore. I got to ask lots of questions. I think I got to challenge everybody.
Yes, you did.
You know, and it took a few years even before I stepped foot into this church. Mm-hmm. But eventually, you know, I got enough of the questions answered and was able to ask the Lord into my heart and eventually get baptized. And, you know, I've been walking with the Lord since. And it was a safe place to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the greatest things about Ashley is Ashley says exactly what she thinks at all times.
No buffer.
Which is so great. And I really appreciated that about you at the time because you were so honest with your questions. And for me, I did believe, and I did believe in Jesus, but it really helped me to articulate why and to discover for myself really anew that, you know, to understand why I believed in him. Mm-hmm.
For sure. Your honest questions challenged us all and grew us all.
And there was this beautiful moment. That was our moment of celebration, I feel like, for all the women in our group. We were out to dinner, and we're sitting there, and Ashley just says, "Hey, so, you know, I'm not sure that I'm ready to let Jesus into the living room, but he's standing in the foyer now." And we're like, "What?" Okay, we all halted and, like, turned to her and, like, "Do you know what you just said?" And we were so excited. I wanted to jump on the table and celebrate because it was a significant moment in her spiritual journey, and we got to be a part of that, which was just amazingly beautiful to watch and see God at work in her life. So it was super fun.
Yes.
Ladies, thank you so much for just having this conversation together. I really appreciate it. And thank you guys.
Good morning. It's great to see all of you guys here. Welcome all of our campuses. And we got folks down on the other end of the building. So thank you guys for being here as well. I always love hearing the stories of how just impact happens in the normal course of our lives. And that's really what this series is about. The idea is, if you were not here the last couple of weeks, we've unpacked this. And the premise is really simple. It's that everybody is leading somebody somewhere. Every single person who is listening, who hears these words, has influence on the life or potential influence, not even potential influence on the life of someone else. Whether it's good or bad is really up to you, and where you're taking them is up to you, but it really is. And we're talking about this idea of as you go, an everyday leadership type mindset. And what I mean by this, I'm not talking about big, giant organizational leadership. I'm talking about leadership in your world, in my world. I remember when I was a high school kid, probably 14, maybe 15 years old, I remember underlining this verse in my new Bible. It's Ephesians chapter 4, verse 1. And it says, you know, this is the Apostle Paul writing, and you can kind of feel the force of his words to me as a 14-year-old kid going, "I urge you to lead your life in a manner worthy of the call that you've been given." I thought, man, I need to straighten up and live right. That was what I felt. "I urge you to lead your life in a manner worthy of the call that you've been given." And over the next really few decades, we begin to unpack what this means, what it is to have a call on your life. Because it's easy for all of us sitting where you are to go, "Oh, we see Mike's call because you're called to ministry or whatever." And I'll tell you, this is not the way I would define my call. My call is something else. This is a part of what I do, is a part of what God has called me to do. And what I want for you to understand is that God has called you, and he's urging you to lead a life worthy of the call that you've been given. And it's not to straighten up and act right. What it is to begin to take seriously the influence, the role, the purpose that God has given you and entrusted you with right where you are and live it from that place. And that's what this is really all about. As you go, leadership is a great way to think about this, because it doesn't mean you have to be somewhere else or to be somebody else. Whenever you think about leadership, people always talk about this idea that, oh, we got to be somewhere else, we got to be somebody else. When I get better at this, when I have more influence and I have more followers, when I have, you know, a better position, then I'll be able to lead. Or we're always trying to figure out if we were more like so-and-so, more like so-and-so. You don't have to be anywhere else, and you don't have to be somebody else. You can lead from right where you are, and that's the beauty of this. It comes off these two passages, one in Deuteronomy, where when Moses is instructing, hey, here's what God wants you to know. Teach these things to your children. And he tells them, as you wake up and as you lie down and as you walk along the road, basically as you go, as you're living your normal life, make sure you're paying attention to the lives of the other people that look to you and that are entrusted to your care. And then the big famous one is in Matthew 28. This is called the Great Commission. If you grew up in the church, you've heard this. Go ye therefore into all the world and make disciples of all nations. And the word is just as you go. It's just as you go, make disciples. As you go, pay attention to the influence that you have as you go. That's what we're talking about. Now, today what I want to do is something that I've really been mulling on for some time, and it really came together in the last couple of days. So I hope this makes sense. I corrected some things from the earlier service, so we'll see how much sense it actually makes. But this is so important, because it's going to give us a framework for you to think about where you are, no matter where you are. You're going to get to put yourself on this map, on this grid, and see where you are, and it will help you know what to do. The basic idea we've been talking about is this real fundamental sense. It comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and following into 11, and it says this. I think we'll have it on the screen. And this is sort of the setup, and it says, all things are lawful, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful, but not all things build up. In other words, you have the right to do a lot of things. This was last week's message. You have the right to do a lot of things, but not all of them, not all of those produce the kind of results that God is looking to produce. Let no one seek his own good, but to that of the good of his neighbor. And we finish up this passage, and it says, so whether you eat or whether you drink, whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. There's a motive in here. And he says, give no offense to the Jews or the Greeks or the church of God, just as I try to please everyone and everything I do, not seeking my own advantage, but to that of many, that they may be saved. There's a motive, there's an agenda, there's all these things in this, but it's not people-pleasing in the sense of, hope people are pleased with me. It's pleasing people in the sense of helping them understand something about themselves. We talked about, I don't have time, this is last week's message. But the very last thing, it says this, you imitate me as I imitate Christ. You imitate me as I imitate Christ. And it's this picture of one person imitating another. And the reality is that people look to you all the time. They see how you are and they begin to model those things. I remember, and the question I left you with is, when people follow you, where do they end up? If people imitate your life, where do they end up? It's really interesting. This is really prominent in our culture. I remember there was a class that I sat in on. It's called Coram Deo. It's a video class. And the guy who was teaching the class, he stood up and he talked about Madonna doing a concert in China. And there were tens of thousands of kids and people who showed up for this concert. This was just about 5 or 6 years ago, showed up at this concert. And he said, what is Madonna doing in China? That was his question. Well, she's performing a concert, right? He said, no, Madonna is discipling the nations. I remember thinking, like, what does he mean? What does he mean, discipling the nations? He says, there's a lot of talk in our culture, and a lot of you guys are in college and you're starting your careers. You're like, I got to be developed. I got to be developed. I need someone to mentor me. I need all, and it's a lot of language. In fact, we hosted the Global Leadership Summit last week or 2 weeks ago here at our church at the Wilmington campus. And there were two speakers that were intriguing. All of them were intriguing, but two that you might be familiar with or at least know of their work. One was Sheryl Sandberg, who's the chief operating officer for Facebook. And she runs a lot of their culture stuff at Facebook. And the other was a guy named Laszlo Bock, who is, he's not no longer there, but he was the originator of the human resource department at Google. And if you've thought anything about anything in terms of business or leadership, you've heard about Google culture. You've heard about Google HR, the way Google treats its employees. That's why college kids won't take jobs, because it ain't Google. We ain't working there. I'm just kidding. And so it's this benefits, and it's all employee, and there's a whole culture of Google. And in fact, it's got its own language. And what's interesting to me is when you enter in and someone helps you become like they want you to become, that is discipleship. That's what it is. It's not some, it's when you become something different because of the people you follow, you are disciples of them. When I followed Patrick in the ninth grade, I grew a mullet and wore a jean jacket with leather tassels. Who do people become because they follow you? We are always actively discipling people. The question is, which direction and where? Who do they become like? This is why this is so important, this idea of imitation. It's looking back and reaching back to someone and saying, I want you to come along with me. It's as you go leadership. Now, here's, I'm making sure I get everything in there. Last week, we talked about this idea that the foundation of closing this gap, as we follow Christ, what we're hoping is that Christ becomes such a part of our lives that when people, when we walk with him, people are naturally following him because they're following us. That's the picture. And what we talked about is the way you close this gap is by trust. This gap is closed by trust. The freedom of trust. And here's what I mean by that. Here's how you can tell which side of this you're on. But some of you, you look at the whole world and you go, I don't trust anybody. Nobody can be trusted. That is a follower mindset. That is a way in which you are looking at the world and choosing not to leverage your influence. I'm just looking for people that I can trust. The other way to look at the world is to go, who can I become trustworthy to? Those are two very different ways of thinking about the world. I can bemoan the fact that people tend to not be trustworthy, right? That's not hard to do, right? I assume y'all know a lot of people who aren't trustworthy, right? Maybe? Okay, perfect. I'm just making sure on the same page. There are a lot of people you can talk about, well, people aren't committed and people don't do this and people don't do that, and just bemoan the fact that you don't have anyone that you can depend on or trust, or you can decide that you're going to be the kind of person who works to build trust, who becomes a trustworthy source in the lives of other people. And it's two different mindsets. I want you to consider this. This is what we talked about last week. And the reality is, what's so important about this is the foundation for trust. If someone's going to trust you freely, it's not going to be because you give them a job or you let them live in your house. The freedom to trust can only rest on a foundation of love. And that's what this is about, and I want to show you how this works today. When we talk about this, what we're doing is we're extending ourselves to another person. I mean, if you think about what the gospel is, what Jesus did is he gave himself for us. That's what the gospel is. He gave himself for us. He extended himself to the point of becoming a human being, becoming killable, of being killed on a cross, and then rise. He extended himself to us. That's the model that we're talking about here. Imitate me as I imitate Christ. It's giving of ourselves. Now, all of you know this, but whenever one person, say a person that's following you, whenever they sneeze, it's little droplets. Achoo! What do you say? Bless you, right? Everybody knows that. Someone sneezes, you say bless you. Whenever you sit down at dinner and someone says, hey, would you mind saying the blessing, right? We have all this idea of what blessing is. In fact, we think of blessing. We talk about this. We hope God blesses us. We wish God's blessings on other people. Whenever we can't really think of anything spiritual to say, we go, God, because we don't want to say good luck. We just say, God bless you. You know, and what's this idea we have? What does it mean to be blessed? You see, it's interesting. I had a conversation years ago about blessing. And I was sitting down with this guy and we were having coffee. Now, I have a car that I've had for a long time. It's a 1989 Volvo station wagon. It's got about 340,000 miles on it. It is not attractive, but it is just cool. It's old. It runs. It has no air conditioner. It's just cool though. And so I drove this car. I've driven it for a really long time. And I was at coffee. I'm meeting this guy and he was talking about God's blessing on his life. How God had favored him. Now, I'm not a prosperity gospel preacher. Sometimes I wish that I was, but I'm not. I don't think that's what the Bible teaches. He was talking about God's blessing in his life, about the house he lived in, about the cars he drove, about all this stuff that he had, that God had just blessed his life. And we walked outside. He said, we walk out there, and there's this big, giant SUV, luxury SUV sitting there. And he says, I mean, look at this. Look at how God has blessed me. And I looked over at my car. I said, what do you think God thinks about me, right? Because we've sort of got a hashtag blessed. It means it's, we got something. I'm like, is that really what it means? Like, what does it mean? When someone sneezes and you say bless you, what are you actually doing? It's interesting that the Hebrew idea of blessing was almost the same thing. It was to extend yourself to another. I mean, listen to the language of this. This is found in Numbers. This is where God blesses his people. He says, he tells Aaron, the priest, I want you to bless my people. And in fact, I was at a service not too long ago. It was a more liturgical service, more formal. The priest wore robes and had these long, it was cool. I thought, man, if I dressed like that, that'd be really cool. And he held his hands up over the congregation before we left. And he said, may the Lord bless you and keep you. May he cause his face to shine upon you. I remember going, that was kind of cool. And this is exactly what happened when Moses tells the priest to declare this to the people. Look what he says. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you so that the Lord will turn his face towards you and give you peace. I'll leave that there for a second. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious. May he turn his face to you and be or give you peace. I want you to imagine for just a second that you turn to the person next to you who's not your spouse. And you don't have to do this because it may be awkward. But imagine if you did this. If you reached over and you took their face in your hands. And you said, may the Lord bless you and keep you. May he cause his face to shine on you and be gracious to you. May he cause his face to turn towards you and give you peace. And you meant it and felt it and wanted it for them. Besides holding their face, it'd feel pretty cool. But that's the picture. It's an intimate sort of, I'm extending myself to you to bless someone, to want for their good. It's where our souls sort of get seen towards another person in this context of sort of pure, I don't need anything back, wanting what's good for you, love. And I talked about that last week. If you weren't here, you can do a refresher course from that. But it's really important to get this picture. Because look what happens next. He says, so that they will put my name on the Israelites and I will bless them. And what he means is this. They will reflect my image. When God extends his blessing toward us, toward you or toward me, what he is saying is, I'm doing this so that my image will be fully seen in you. Do you know why? Because that's what you and I were created to do anyway. That's the picture. So that's the framework, what we want to look at as we think about this. Now, I want us to start to take a little test. So if you have a pen and a piece of paper, this would be helpful. If you don't, get a pen or something out, and you can write on your hand or your neighbor's hand or whatever. This will be really helpful for you to get I want you to do a test. Take a test with me and want to see how you do because we're going to graph your results and see where you are. And this will hopefully make sense by the time we're done. In Colossians, there's more language like we're talking about. This is in Colossians 4, and it says this, be wise in the way that you act toward outsiders. Be wise in the way that you act toward outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Now, real quick, just in your mind, think about what it means for you to make the most of every opportunity. And there are all sorts of things that pop into our heads. Man, could I get them to buy me dinner? Could I get them to do this? Could I get her to do that? Will they respond in this way? Your kids come in and they say, hey, Dad, you look really nice today. I might be able to get, you know, the keys to the car or money for this. You know, there's all kinds of ways we see how do we make the most of opportunities. And most of them, if we're honest, to make the most of the opportunity means that it worked out well for who? For me, right, for me. I mean, you say me, I say me, we say me. Not you, you get it. That's what we think about opportunities. If you remember what we read earlier, Paul says that I don't want to do things to please other people so they really think well of me. I want to do things so that they will actually find the life that they're looking for anyway, that they might be saved. And he talks about this. And so when you begin to sort of stack all this up, what I began to think of is this sort of system or scale of how to determine where we are and what we need to do in terms of our own influence, our own influence. So it looks something like this. If you started on one end and you draw this scale, some good drawing music. I'll just... On one side is love, and on the other side, I'm going to use the word indifference. And what I mean by this is what I'm going to call your rev scale, R-E-V, rev scale. What gets you moving? So be like this. If someone said, hey, Mike, do you want to play golf? I'm a one. Because like, if I don't have anything else to do in the world, there's no opportunity for anything, I might play golf. I'm a one. If it happened, I'd be okay with it. Maybe. But I'm not going to do anything to accommodate it. Now, on the other side, you have this idea of you're going, if someone said, hey, Mike, you want to go surfing? I'm going to start figuring out how to get out of work to go surf. Right? You're going to move things around. You're going to really be intentional about it. So that's your scale. Now, I want to think about this in this way. Because what this rev scale is, in our terms of leadership and influence, is how we relate to other people. How you relate to other people. Are you moved by them? Not really. As long as, right, you see what I'm saying, right? And nobody, we're not talking about hate. There's enough of that. We're talking about indifference. I'm not really moved by other people, but that's just kind of me. And over here is like, you're just, that's your life. You want to serve other people. And so get a number in your head, 1 through 10. Don't tell anybody out loud. This is just for your own, and I'll help you scale this in just a minute. It'll get more clear. Now, the second scale we're going to use is what we're calling the reflection scale. The reflection scale. And or the REF scale, if you're using, like, you want to make it look REV and REF. It has nothing to do with that, but you get the idea. Now, what this one is a one is whose will are you most concerned about? This is the reflection scale. Are you most concerned about? A one is my will and my way. Traffic's bad when it's bad for me, right? You're driving too slow. If you're in my way, you're driving too fast. If you're behind me. My will, my way. Somebody got it. I'm glad you, that's, don't we think like that? My will and my way are the most important thing in my life. A good day is defined by the fact that my kids did what they were supposed to do, my wife did what she was supposed to do, work went well, and that was a good day. That's a one. A 10 is, guess whose will? Right, God's. We're in church, it's a safe answer. God's will, God's way, God's kingdom. So get yourself on a 1 through 10 on that one. Now what we're going to do, and if you picked 5, round down. I'll tell you why, because you're like, my self-esteem can't handle, if I'm like, but I'm right in the middle. No, you're not, you're just round down. I'll help you. I'll help you make the decision. So this is how it starts to work. So it's 1 to 10, 1 to 10. Down here, you have sort of your self-image or your self-will or your way. And then up here, you have God's way or God's image. His blessing for you is to do what? To make sure that his image is seen in your life. So here's what you would do in theory if you were ranking yourself. You'd say, well, I'm sort of indifferent to people, but I'm pretty committed to God. So I'm like right here. And you'll put yourself in this quadrant. You're not super moved by people. You're not like hating them. Maybe you overestimate. Maybe you're back here a little bit more than you think you are. But you're like, I'm not moved towards people terribly. At least not in my actions. It doesn't compel me to do something. I might feel, but it doesn't compel me to do anything. But I'm really concerned about God. You'd be up here. And some of you may be like, man, you're like fired up for people, but really what you realize is you're like really just trying to get people to do what you want them to do anyway. And so you're gonna be over there. And maybe you're here and you're like, I don't know and I don't care and I'm all about me. And you're down there. And you don't even care. So begin to think about this. What marks this? And so down here, for example, what will happen here, if you wind up over in this and you can test yourself, if you wind up over here, you're really sort of plagued by a victim mindset. It's more like, I can't do anything, nobody's doing anything for me, so the whole world is against me. It's just you just develop a victim. So if you develop a victim mindset, if you have one, it's probably because you're living down here in this quadrant. You're probably not really driven by God's image. You're more obsessed with yours, and you've really just become indifferent to people around you or anything happening any differently. And it's not a bad thing. It's a condition that causes a bad thing. You shouldn't feel bad that you feel bad. What you should say is, what can I do? Because that doesn't, this happens. People will drive you insane to where you go, why should I bother to deal with anybody else? It's a normal thing. But you lose influence when you become indifferent toward other people. You lose influence, or at least in this capacity, you become a victim when you become indifferent and you become obsessed with yourself. Over here, this is marked by, I'm gonna put manipulation. That's a mean word. And let me tell you what I mean. I'm fired up for you. But I'm only fired up for you because you can get done the things that I want done. And as soon as you can't get things done that I want done, guess what happens? You're out. This is the way most of our culture works, by the way. And this again, I don't want to go, I'm a bad person. This has happened to me. This has happened to me. I felt this, right? I want people, but I want them to make me feel better. I go home and said, you know, Richie, I didn't really preach a very good message today. I'm using my relationship for what? So he'll say nice things, because who's it about? A need for my image to be upheld. And it's manipulative. It's manipulative. Does that make sense? Are you following? Up here, it can be lots of different things. I was going to use the SAT word myriad of things, but I thought that might be a lot of things. Some people in this, and I don't know the right term yet, but basically what this term is, they collect stuff about God. So some people in this category, the more you know God and the more indifferent you become, the more judgmental you might be. And you can spell it with an E or without an E. You become more judgmental. Do you know people like this? Oh, they love God. They want God's image, but they have zero regard for another human being. For some people here, you feel helpless. You're like, man, I want God's will. I want God's kingdom. I just don't know what to do from where I am. I just don't know. And you're stuck. Because maybe that one's maybe a little bit further over here. Maybe you feel worthless. And maybe it's not as bad as feeling worthless. Maybe it's just not worthy enough. I've been there. I vacillate back there quicker than anything else. I want for God's kingdom to come to bear on our world. Sometimes I think, oh, who am I? Who am I? Who do I think I am? And so it's ironic the dinner bell went off at 12 noon. I'm just kidding. We're having lots of noises in the room for all our other campuses. We're like, what are y'all talking about? So the idea, the great thing about having attention problems is that doesn't bother me at all. Like I'm locked back in right on focus. So my point is this. My point is the fact that when we start to feel like we can't do anything, we will tend to withdraw from people to keep them because we don't know what to do. So this is all a part of this. Now here's what's really interesting. And I love neurology and neuroscience. And so I've been researching this, and this is what they're studying now, which is so cool. Because there is this idea. So Paul says, imitate me as I imitate Christ. We have this image that we watch Paul do something, and then we do something. That's not what this is talking about at all. There's something in us, there's a part of our brain, researchers have looked at this, that whenever we see someone suffering, there's this part of our brain called the anterior cingulate cortex that lights up, and the worse the suffering is, the hotter it gets, or the more activity it has. And so with that, they began to study this, and they realized that that part of our brain doesn't compel necessarily action, just something is really bad. So they began to study other parts and how we relate to each other, and they've discovered these things are called mirror neurons. You ever heard this? You might not have heard of it, but all of you know what it is. I'll tell you how you know. If you have ever watched a skateboard video or blooper videos, and you see a guy skateboarding down a stair rail, right? He's on the stair rail, and the board goes out, and one leg goes one way, and the other leg goes the other way. You know what I'm talking about? What happens when he falls, straddle on his, everybody goes, oh, everybody does it. And you're not even you. And you're like, oh, that must have hurt. Or you watch a football player, right? The running back comes around, he gets hit in the legs, and his leg does that crazy thing. Oh, some of you did. Oh. And they've been studying this, that human beings will respond to something that happens to another person, even though it didn't happen to them, in the exact same way they responded. Mirror neurons. Something is happening that when I see something happen in you, it triggers something in me that feels the same way. They believe that this is why human beings imitate one another so dependent on imitation for learning, right? You teach your kids to talk. What do? You get in there and go, say mommy, not dada, right? Say, and you're like, look at my lips. You're trying to get their lips to move just like your lips. Because you're trying to get that part, the mirror neurons, to go, you've got to imitate me. But it's more than that. This is what's really interesting. This part of our brain, and this is all speculative, and they're figuring this out. They're looking at, I just think it's fascinating when science discovers things that Jesus said 2,000 years ago. Like he actually knew something about us, right? I'm like, well, this is cool. So they believe that this thing within our brains is the part not only where imitation is so important, but also where empathy is rooted. And it's not empathy, a feeling bad. It really is empathy as I see you as a part of me. Right? What did Jesus say, the great commandment? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. The second command is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. It might be more literal than we think that it is. We think that loving ourselves means to go, how do I love me? I'm going to do the same thing for that person. No. It's you make them a part of you. You extend yourself to them. So think about this. We wake up on this side and we start to say, oh my gosh, I really want to extend myself to a person in my sphere today. And I'm at some level where I'm at least interested or praying for or hoping for God's kingdom. And maybe tomorrow it gets a little better. Right, some of you graded yourself, you're like, oh, I'm like a 10 out of 10. Like, you're in the wrong church if that's you, okay? And we start along the way. And it's just these little things that we do purely out of wanting to extend ourselves to another person, to love another person, to bless them. And you know what? Remember what God says, we bless people. He blesses us. We bless others. You know why? The same reason. So that his image comes to bear on his people. And it's all these little single things that you do as you go. You know what this is called in this quadrant? Some of you, all of us, myself, I get in these boxes a lot. Anybody else? But you know what? I also get in this box. And my bet is, if you've been walking with the Lord, you have too. You've been in this box, and the problem is you haven't really noticed it because you don't think you're doing anything spiritual. You don't think that doing anything matters, or you don't think they're doing anything significant. And the reality is there's nothing more significant in the world than to have someone follow you and end up with Jesus. And that happens not because you can out-argue them, not because you can outwit them. This last verse, it says, let your speech be seasoned, full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you might know how to answer everyone. It doesn't mean giving them a right answer. Sometimes they just don't have a right response. I mean, I think about what if influence, because even when we try to influence someone spiritually, I realize, oh my gosh, this person needs Jesus. I begin to concoct the arguments in my head. How can I get them to believe what I believe? Sometimes that can be manipulation. Because I want to make sure that I did the right thing. I want to make sure that, you know, it can very easily become this. And we get accustomed to this. I'm not saying this is very important. We do whole seminars around here to help people give answers. And it's very important. But I'm saying sometimes when we're talking to someone, our influence isn't just about getting them to believe like we believe or think like we think. Sometimes our influence is for them to simply know that they are loved unconditionally. And I think if that's where your influence starts, guess what happens? Influence built on love has the freedom of trust. And you'll close this gap. And when they get close to you, they get close to Christ. And the closer they get, you know, there's nothing more important. There's just nothing more important. And so what I would encourage you to do this week is I hope you'll mark this down, think about it, add to it. Maybe you go, my emotion was something different than this. Mine was here. Mine was there, whatever it might be. But don't just pay attention to all the things you don't do. Pay attention to the things you do as well. Because when we sort of get aware and understand this idea of everyday leadership, we actually do the Great Commission in ways that are far more pervasive than we ever imagined and actually begin to make a difference in the world simply because you and me and all of us decided to make disciples of Jesus Christ as you go. Let's pray together. God, help us. Help us to see this. I pray there will be no guilt or shame, that those who are stuck in various places, you would bring the right people, the right steps, whatever it is to just move them forward. And God, that tomorrow, today, we would look at our sphere of influence and long for their good and long for your image to be seen. God, that those two things together would equal this obedience to this great commission. God, I thank you for the genius that you have created us with that allows us to actually want for another person and all the different things that happen as a result of that. People would respond to being loved. God, give us the courage. Give us the freedom to trust you enough to become trustworthy for those around us that are looking for you so desperately. And I pray these things in the name of your son, Jesus. Amen.